Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is tape number 62 in the series entitled Three Levels of Intimacy, Part 2, recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 5th of Adar, 5759.
Morning, Tanya Perek of Gimel. We're in the middle of the 23rd chapter, page 56, at the two dots in the center of the page. In this chapter, the Alter Rebbe began analyzing the terminology used in Kabbalah, in Zohar and in Tikkuni Zohar, to describe the nature and the essence of Torah and Mitzvahs. We're concerning Torah, the Kabbalah, the Zohar uses the term that Torah and Hashem are totally and truly one. Concerning mitzvahs, the Tikkuni Zohar uses the term that Ramach mitzvahs, the 248 mitzvahs, commandments, are Ramach Evar and the Malka. Of the 248 organs of the king, obviously in referring to, metaphorically referring to Hashem. And Alter Rebbe began by explaining the nature of mitzvahs, beginning by discussing the fact that mitzvahs are Hashem's pnimius ratzon ha'alyon v'cheftzei amiti, His true, intimate, and internal will. And in that depends the vitality and the energy of all of the worlds. Because the most underlying, essential will, which fuels the continuous creation and sustenance of all of the universes, is Hashem's will for Kiyuma, for mitzvahs. Therefore, we immediately understand somewhat the comparison of mitzvahs to organs, because just as the organs of the body are those vessels, those physical compartments, chambers, and vessels that allow the soul, the energy of man's soul, to be realized in a concrete and manifest way in this world, in a physical world, the organs are the kalim, as the vessels for the realization, revelation, and expression of the soul down here in this world. The same is true concerning the mitzvahs, that the mitzvahs are the organs, the vessels, the garments through which the soul, through which the energy of life is brought forth, is communicated, is projected. And the Alter Rebbe continued to explain furthermore the concept of an aver, of an organ. It's not just a vessel which communicates the soul, but it is a vessel which has no distinct identity and personality save the soul. The organs of the body, he said, totally surrender their entire identity to the essence of the soul. Therefore, when the soul of man desires or experiences a desire, a want to move an arm, a leg, or another organ, the organs immediately respond, Alter Rebbe says, momentarily, without any delay, and furthermore, not even requiring a commandment. Because the organs are so intuned with the will of the soul that they instinctively sense it, experience it. Not like something else which has to be a separate entity, which the soul would have to command and request to do for it something, but rather the organs are totally intuned to the soul to the extent that they experience the will of the soul. And the same is true concerning mitzvahs, which we define as the organ of the king. Because in the realization of a mitzvah, Alter Rebbe said, there are three components. The first component is the act of the mitzvah and the energy of that act. Whether it's placing a mezuzah on one's doorpost, whether it's putting on tefillin on one's arm and leg, whether it's distributing charity to people in need. Whatever it may be, that is one of the components of the performance of a mitzvah, the act itself. A second component is the energy of man that is performing the act. The energy of one's soul, the koyach hamaisa that the soul possesses, which is imbued and involved in that act, which is enclosed and is defined by that act when it is performing the act. And the third component is the physical instrument which is involved in the performance of the act. Again, whether it's the arm, the leg, the tongue, the physical brain, the mouth, the eyes, whatever it may be, there are the physical instruments of man's body which are involved in the performance of a mitzvah. And here the Alter Rebbe distinguished and he said, the former two, their relationship to the divine energy and will at the time of performing a mitzvah is like the relationship of the organ to the soul, of the body to the soul. The latter, the third component's relationship to the divine will, is that the relationship of a merkava, of a chariot, to its guider, to its master. Now the Alter Rebbe will continue to address the nature of learning Torah. Let's learn inside. Again, the two dots on page 56. But the thought and meditation on the words of Torah, which is accomplished in the brain, the thought process of a human being is obviously performed in the brain. And the power of speech engaged in words of Torah, which is in the mouth, these being the innermost garments of the divine soul, they are closer, so to speak, to the soul itself than action. The most external garment, maisa, which is involved, which is the garment that's involved in the most mitzvahs, the kol shekei nefesh halakis atzma melubashes behem, and surely the divine soul itself, which is clothed in them, in the thought and speech engaged in Torah study, kula miyuchadim mamish, b'yichud gomer b'ratzon elyon v'loimer kavo levat. All of them are fused in perfect unity with the divine will and are not merely a vehicle, a chariot for it. They are totally fused in perfect unity, he says, with the divine will. And Alter Rebbe explains, key, because Ratzon ha'elyon hu hadvar halacha atzma shemaharer u'medaber bo. The divine will is identical with the halachic subject of which one thinks and speaks. The Ratzon ha'elyon is the halachic subject. Hu. It's nothing else but the halachic subject which one is thinking about or talking about, or speaking about. Shekol ha'alachis, because all of the laws, all of the halachis, in prate hamshachis pnimiyus ratzon elyon atzmai, are particular expressions of the innermost divine will itself, Shekach ala b'ritzayni yizbarach. For Hashem wills it thus. Shadavar zem mutere kasher. That a particular thing be deemed permissible or kosher. Ay patere zakay, or that this person be found exempt and another innocent. Ay lahepech, or the reverse. So every single halacha expresses the very divine will, and therefore the unity, which the study of the halacha effect between the soul and the divine will, surpasses even the unity of body and soul. V'chein kol tziruf yaisis tanach. Similarly, first he addressed halacha, and halacha includes everything connected to halacha. The actual halacha, its rationale, questions involved, the answers involved, explanations involved, and so forth. And he adds, V'chein kol tziruf yaisis tanach. Similarly, all the letter combinations of the Tanakh, of the Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuv. Einam shachas ritzayne v'chachmaseh. They are also expressions of Hashem's will and wisdom. Hamiyuchad is be'ein seif baruch hu betachlus hayichud, which are united with the blessed Ein Sof in a perfect unity, shehu hayedeya v'hu hamada chuli, since he is the knower, the knowledge, it's, and so forth. The knower and the knowledge and the known. So therefore, when one studies Torah, whether it's halacha or the combination, or the Tanakh, Torah, Nevi'im, and Ksuvim, he becomes united with the divine will and wisdom, which are absolutely one with Hashem himself. Zeu shekasav. And this is what is meant when we say, when it's written, that the Torah and Hashem are absolutely one, v'loy eivarin de malka l'chud kipikudin. They are not merely organs of the king, as are the mitzvahs. Concerning mitzvahs, the Zayah, the Kone Zayah says, they are Ivar in the Malk. Concerning Torah, we say, not just organs of the king, which are also unified with the king, but Kulachad, totally one with the king. And the mitzvah of learning Torah, so the mitzvah element is Ivar in the Malk, and the Torah element is a Kulachad. What is Dalter Rebbe saying here? You understand the pshat? There is a relationship, there is a relationship, and then there is a relationship. And all three levels are real relationships. But the first level relative to the second level is almost insignificant. And the second level pales infinitely in comparison to the third level of a relationship. So the first axiom which destroys a relationship, the element which is obviously the greatest contradiction to a relationship is, as everyone knows, the ego. The ego is man's, is the enemy, is the deepest, most powerful obstacle which doesn't allow one to enter into a real relationship, because the ego is the ultimate divider and the separating force and factor between human beings and between any two elements that want to have a relationship. The ego means that my I is exclusively defined by my I, and thus not allowing space or room for anything that is perceived as something outside of my eye. So ego doesn't go into the first level, ego is out. The first level of a relationship is where a human being recognizes his or her identity as going beyond the ego, as yearning for something beyond the ego, and hence being ready to enter into a real relationship, which requires, to a significant degree, surrender of the self. Not being exclusively, unequivocally, and absolutely self-contained, self-oriented, self-directed, self-centered. Person must tune into another human being. In all relationships, obviously, in marriage, it's the most conspicuous, and the same is true concerning parents and children and close friends and colleagues and teachers and students and any type of relationship. Obviously, there are many levels in that. But on that level, you're dealing with two people, and I start caring for the other person. I like the other person. I might love the other person, but like I said earlier, if the other person wants something, that person has to request it from me, and I go ahead and do it. So that's a relationship. And it's a powerful relationship in today's day and age, especially. And it could be sustained for many years, and so forth. But it pales in comparison, and it's infinitely inferior to the next level, where, as mentioned again, it's not any more about two distinct personalities. The two become so closely identified with each other that I can begin, or you can begin, sensing and experiencing the needs, the desires, the loves of the other human being. And that requires a much deeper surrender of the ego. And this is the difference between Merkava and Aver. A Merkava is a chariot which surrenders its ego. It's there to serve its master. An Aver is not only there to serve its master. An Aver is totally in tune with the soul. The soul doesn't have to communicate its wishes to the Aver. You have to communicate to a separate personality, to a distinct identity, separate and divorced from yourself. To the Merkava, you have to communicate it. To the Aver, you don't have to communicate it. It's so in tune with you. When you experience it, it finds expression in the Aver naturally, instinctively, and therefore without a delay of time, because the passage of time is required only when there has to be a transference from one domain to another domain. But the Aver totally tunes into the domain of the soul. It strips itself from being a separate identity, a separate personality, not only without a separate agenda. A Merkava also doesn't have a separate agenda, but it's a separate entity that's ready to commit itself and surrender itself to, whether consciously or non-consciously. Obviously, a wagon doesn't have that consciousness, or a car. But the point is that it's ready to commit. In the Aver, it's not just it doesn't have another agenda, doesn't have a self-centered set of values that are dictating its behavior. Then there's b'chol no relationship. In the Aver, it's much more than that. Not only doesn't have a separate agenda, doesn't have a separate personality. It's totally tuned into the energy of the soul. But then there's another level of relationship. The Aver is not the soul. The Aver is not the soul. There's a soul and there's a body. True, the body is there for the soul. The body is totally tuned into the soul. The body has redefined its identity from being a self-contained and self-defined personality, so to speak. Rather, its whole definition is to serve as an expression, a mirror, a projection for the energy, for the vitality, for the psyche, the character of the soul. But it's something else. There is a relationship between two things. The most powerful relationship. It's the most powerful relationship and bond that can occur between two things. But ultimately, there is the you and there is the I. True, the I is not something separate than the you. The I totally surrendered itself to hear the melodies of the you. Instinctively, it should affect the I. But, nevertheless, after everything said and done, there are ultimately two distinct identities, at least in a subtle fashion. You cannot say that the will, that the arm is the will of the soul. There is the will of the soul, there is the vision of the soul, there is the passion of the soul, and one's legs and arms and all other 248 organs are totally in tune with that will, and the moment the soul experiences a desire or a yearning or a want, it will find expression in the organs. But can you say that the leg is the experience of the soul? The leg implements it, the leg fulfills it, the leg performs it, without any delay, but this is a physical leg and this is a soul. In relationships between human beings, even when I'm totally in tune with the other person and I experience the other person's wants and desires and wishes and instantaneously I go and act upon that, nevertheless, there are two distinct elements and no one can be blamed for that. That's how it is. You're dealing with two people. For the Alter Rebbe, a real relationship meant something deeper. Where the two merge into a seamless whole. Where there's no you and I anymore. Where the I becomes you. There's no ruts in being implemented by something or someone which is totally in tune with the ruts in. There is a total unity with the Ratzin and there is nothing else. And here we have, in our world, and in our relationship with our Creator, these three elements. First of all, you have that element of life which doesn't enter into your relationship with God. That is, the ego of the universe. The ego of the universe is self-centered, experiences itself as something distinct and separate, and therefore it's incapable of a relationship with Hashem. But in relationships where there is surrender of the ego, we have three levels. And that begins in the world of mitzvahs. The acts of mitzvahs are acts which bespeak their Creator, which declare to us that there is a God, there is spirituality, there is holiness at the essence of the universe. And here there are three elements. In the first two we have in mitzvahs, as mentioned, the relationship of one's physical body to the divinity of creation is level one in relationship. And that's a major achievement and accomplishment. When one's physical body is involved in a mitzvah, the Alter Rebbe says it becomes a merkava for the Ratzon Elyon. A merkava means it redefines itself from an egotistical, self-centered, coarse, physical, mundane entity to one which recognizes its deeper energy, purpose, vitality, source, and essence, and surrenders to that. So the physicality of one's body is redefined at the time that it is involved in the performance of a mitzvah. As he said, the physical fingers and palm that distribute charity to a poor man, to a poor man or woman. That physical hand, that physical palm, those physical fingers. The physical legs, feet, that are helping an elderly person cross the street. Hamahalchis l'dvar mitzvah. Are walking for the sake of going to perform a holy, good, sacred, godly deed. The mouth, the tongue, the physical brain. Not the spirituality that's involved in the body. That's something else. We'll talk about that in a moment. Here a very powerful relationship happened. They redefined their entity from an egotistical, self-contained identity to an identity which surrenders and is committed to express a deeper divine truth in life. It's relationship A. Then there is a deeper level. A var in the malka. You're not just a merkava to the king, you're an organ. Like the relationship of a body to a soul. And this relates to another two components involved in the performance of a mitzvah, as mentioned earlier. A, the act itself. And B, the spiritual energy of the soul imbued in that act. These two elements, their relationship to the divine essence and energy, He says it's not just like the relationship of a Merkava, it's like the relationship of an organ to a soul. They have no separate identity whatsoever that has to be surrendered, that has to overcome itself, so to speak. Like in the case of a Merkava, where there's something distinct. Rather, they have no other definition save the fact that they're expressing the soul. The Merkava does have another definition. Therefore, the Merkava has to be communicated to. Because you are not in tune to me. You are not I. You have your own thing. Aver doesn't have another definition save the fact that it expresses you. The energy of an act of a mitzvah and the spiritual energy involved in that act have no definition whatsoever save the fact that they're expressing Ratzon Alyon. True, now. So they have no definition save the fact that they express the soul, that they express the beloved one. But they express the beloved one. They're not the beloved one. Here we come to Teda. Teda is something else, Dr. Rebbe said. What's a mitzvah? Hashem wants that a certain act should be performed. Hashem has a desire that a certain act should be performed. The human being goes ahead and performs that act. The performance of the act is not the ratzon, it's the implementation of the ratzon. For example, Hashem wants that a Jew should put on tefillin every morning. So what does he want? He wants that a Jew should put on tefillin. When a Jew goes ahead and performs the act of putting on tefillin, is he connected with the ratzon itself? He implemented the ratzon. He has executed the ratzon. He has fulfilled the ratzon. He has realized the ratzon. But the act of putting on tefillin is a physical act. It's not the ratzon. It's a consequence of the ratzon. It's a fulfillment of the ratzon. In the relationship of the soul and the body, if the soul wishes, the soul desires right now to move its arm, to move its hand, so the body immediately responds and lifts its hand, as I have just did. The lifting of the hand was an expression of the desire of the soul. It was a consequence of the desire of the soul. But is that the desire of the soul? It's synonymous with the term desire of the soul. It has no identity save that, but it's a fulfillment of the desire. It is not the very desire. Concerning Torah, the Alter Rebbe says, what are you doing when you're learning Torah? What are you learning about? You're learning the Ratzon. You're learning the Ratzon itself. You're learning the mitzvah, k'shartam la'isal yidecha v'hayolat etaf es b'ninecha. That is what you're internalizing in your mind and in your mouth and so forth. The goof is not the nefesh. Aver and the Malka are expressions of the Nefesh, but they are not the soul. The soul is a spiritual entity, a spiritual psyche, a spiritual character, which has experiences, wants, desires, and the body is totally there for the soul. Totally, unequivocally, absolutely, it strips itself from every identity save of expressing the soul. But nevertheless, there is a soul and there is the expressor of the soul. That's what happens at a mitzvah soul. What happens when you learn Torah? The Alter Rebbe says, Ratzon Alyon, hu advar Allah atzma. Here the very Ratzon it is becoming internalized in the human being. The Jew is learning what is Torah. He's learning what Hashem wants. And therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, Torah, we say, Reisav Kutcher Bricha Kol Echad. The relationship of mitzvahs to the Ratzon Elyon is like an Eivor and the Malka. A Reisav Kutcher Bricha is Kol Echad. Because the mitzvah ultimately is like an Eivor to the Ratzon. The Torah is not like an Eivor. Torah is one with Hashem. And because Hashem's Ratzon is one with Him, because Hu Amadav Hu Yedeya, as we learned, He is the knower, the knowledge, and the known, so they're one. So therefore we say the Torah is one with Hashem, because Hashem is one with His will, and since the Torah is His will, so it's one with Him. The mitzvahs are not His will. The mitzvahs are the realization and the implementation of His will. This is, by the way, also the answer to what you asked last week, when he says that the Maisa mitzvahs are levush to the Ratzon Elyon. This is what he meant, that it's a levush to the Ratzon Elyon. Or says to levush, it is the Ratzon Elyon. The Maisa of it on Ahmed Aleph, he said, the Maisa mitzvahs is a levush for the Ratzon Elyon. What says, the Maisa is the Ratzon Elyon. The Maisa is not the Ratzon Elyon. Figuratively, we use those terms. We use those terms. Obviously, the mitzvah is the Ratzon Elyon. But on a deeper level, there is a subtle distinction. The Ratzon is that there should be the mitzvah. The mitzvah itself is an implementation of that Ratzon. That's why Torah we say Kol Echad, and mitzvahs we say Evar and the Malk. Not a mitzvah, and this is Torah. But now another a very important issue has to be addressed. What is the relationship of the human being to Hashem when he learns Torah? We understood why Torah is one with Hashem and mitzvahs are the Evarim of Hashem. That we understood. Because Torah is the Ratzon. And mitzvahs are the consequence of the Ratzon. Mitzvahs are the object through which the Ratzon is realized and expressed. Mitzvahs are the entities, the components, the properties. Mitzvahs are the act of performance of mitzvahs, and everything involved in that act are the properties through which the divine Ratzon is realized. Torah is not a property divorced from the Ratzon. Torah is the Ratzon. That was the point. So, and mitzvahs are Ivar and the Malk. But what about now the human being involved in learning Torah? Concerning a mitzvah, we said what? That the spiritual energy involved in doing the mitzvah is like an aver to the melech. What about a person's character? The thought and the speech that's involved in learning Torah. What's that? What's the relationship of those elements to Hashem's Ratzon? Like an aver also? The Torah itself is one with Hashem, because that is the Ratzon. The mitzvahs are not the Ratzon, the mitzvahs are Ivar and the Malka. What about the person involved in Torah? So here the Alter Rebbe says that in the case of Torah, the human being also becomes Kol Echad, not just like an Eiver. And this requires understanding how. How do you become the Ratzon? When you learn Torah, the very Ratzon is internalized within you, true. So here the Alter Rebbe says a Gevaldik Echidosh. And here he drives home the point with which he began these several chapters concerning what the unity of Hashem means. Now, since the divine will, which is in perfect unity with Hashem Himself, stands completely revealed in the divine soul and in its inner garments, its thought and speech, while a person occupies himself with words of Torah, and there is nothing, absolutely nothing, obscuring the divine will at that time, it follows that at that time the soul and these garments are also truly and absolutely totally united with Hashem at that time. with a unity comparable to that unity of Hashem's speech and thought with His essence, as has been explained above. Ki ein shum davar nifrit ki im behester ponim kanal. For nothing is separate from Hashem except insofar as His countenance is concealed. Here the Alter Rebbe reveals the true dynamic of what is occurring when a Jew is studying Torah. So what did Alter Rebbe explain earlier? In chapters 20 and 21 and 22, two primary points which we discussed at length during those chapters, being as follows. A, to define the world and life in terms of ego is not just not too constructive and not too helpful, but it's a total illusion. Someone who holds on to the ego and lives based on his or her ego, the primary problem from the Alter Rebbe's perspective is not just a technical or psychological problem. It's an essential problem that you're holding on to something that does not exist. Why? Because the world has no identity save the divine identity that is constantly bringing it into being and granting it its design, character, and form, spiritual, physical, emotional, at every single moment. The world is something from nothing, and the something has no identity save the divine energy that's forming it, and so forth. That's A. But then the Alter Rebbe went a step further. And he said, the whole world is nothing but Hashem's word, so to speak. Hashem's energy. What is the relationship of those words to Himself, to His intimate self? What's the relationship of one word, or five words, to the deepest levels of your soul and consciousness? It's utterly insignificant. So therefore, all the worlds are kula kamei kalei chashiv, are as if they don't exist, relative to the inner ocean, so to speak, of Hashem's inner identity. Now, in the human metaphor, in the human case, once I utter a word, it leaves me. So it assumes an identity. Since leis hasar poniminei, there's no place devoid of Hashem. So the words never left him. So the relationship of his words to himself, even after they have been actualized and created a universe, is similar to the relationship of one word of mine when it's still embedded in the depth of my soul. Since the words of Hashem never left him because there's no space devoid of him, so his very intimate self is present, so to speak, in every space, metaphorically speaking, conceptual space and physical space. Hence, the world doesn't only have, the world is not only not an egotistical reality. That's a given. The world can't even be defined as a reality, as a reality, even as an expression of the divine reality, because the Dibur, when it's still included in its essence, is totally nullified in the presence of the intimate self of Hashem. So that's the fact. But what's the problem? It's not a problem. Hashem did not want that the world should perceive itself initially as that, so He created a Hester Panim. He created a Hester Panim, which means that divine creative energy is deeply concealed, and the concealment operates on two levels. Level A of the concealment achieves that the world should not perceive the speech as being included in its origin. The world should perceive the speech as a speech that has left the speaker. Even the highest worlds perceive Hashem's speech, perceive it as something that left its speaker. Hence, they can define themselves as a godly reality, not as an egotistical reality. Olam Atzilus doesn't define itself as an egotistical reality, or Olam Habriya. These are the Kabbalistic supernal worlds. But as a reality, a divine reality, an Aver, the reality. But the Hester Panim also does something else, and this is what happens in this world. It doesn't only separate the speech from the speaker, it denies that there has been a speech. It says there's no speaker. Not just the speaker spoke and he went home, and now we're dealing with the speech. He never spoke. He was never even born. That's a deeper level of Hester Panim. And this is what creates the perception of ego in our universe. Walter Rebbe says like this: the moment you tune in to a space where the Hester doesn't exist, so reality emerges. When a Jew learns Torah, he learns Torah. What is happening? He's now becoming in touch with the intimate rationality, with the intimate self of Hashem, with the intimate will of Hashem. This is the very will. And it is the will. There's nothing separate of the will in Torah. He has now the very rationality in him, in its full power, in its full intensity, in its full splendor, majesty, and radiance. There's no Hester upon him. If there's no Hester upon him, his thought and speech that are involved in this Ratzinalion are redefined, and they become similar to the speech and the thought of Hashem himself, which is totally united with him. Which means that at that moment, what's happening in the realm of the human being is an experience of reality as it is in its quintessential, most true level. Hashem's word also speaks, and Hashem also thinks. But we say, this speech which produces a world is not something separate from him. It never left the speaker. And therefore, it's always related to him. And it, so to speak, drowns in the overwhelming, intimate ocean of Hashem's inter-identity. And it never emerges as a distinct identity save him. So over here, there's no Aver. When the Dibur is meyuchad with him, when the Dibur is in him, it's not an Aver de Malka. It has no separateness besides him. When a Jew is thinking Torah, so you're saying, the Ratzin is in me, but I have my own identity, I have my Machshava, Zakman, no. Since your Machshava right now is defined by Limud HaTorah, Torah is the very Ratzin Alien. Torah is the Ratzin Alien, so there's no Hester upon him. There is no concealment. You're now in touch with the very Ratzin Alien that has not contracted itself, that has not been diluted, that has not been concealed, that has not been obscured, and so forth. So therefore, man's machshava and dibur, so to speak, are redefined. They are words and thoughts which are one with him, and therefore they become totally miyuchad, just like Hashem's own machshava and dibur. So when your thoughts and your words are involved in worldly issues, they're affected by the concealment, which doesn't allow us to sense the world as an expression of the divine reality. First of all, doesn't allow us even to perceive the speaker. Even if our thoughts and words allow us to perceive the speaker, we still feel that the speech has left the speaker. So there's like a beautiful speaker, but there's also a beautiful speech. Even in mitzvahs, where the human being acknowledges the Ratzon Alyon, since the mitzvah is not the Ratzon, so the mitzvah is an experience where the Ratzon gives room for something else, so to speak, so there's somewhat of a little Hester there. But since Torah is the Ratzon itself, and there's nothing outside of the Ratzon, it's Hashem's intimate self, so there's no Hester whatsoever. If there's no Hester whatsoever, everything that's involved, all components involved, become partners in that level of reality. And in that level of reality, his Machshava and Dibra are totally miyuchad with him. So they're not a Merkava, they're not an Aver, the Malka. The person's character and identity become one with Hashem. They totally transcend their own identity. They become part and parcel of a godly identity itself. There's no you and I, there's you. So in learning Torah, the Alter Rebbe says, here is where real intimacy is achieved. Real intimacy with Hashem means there's no more a you and an I. There is total unity. And that's why he says, by Torah, the machshava and the hirur are miyuchadim b'yichud gamer b'ratzon aliyah. A merkava surrenders itself to ratzon aliyah. A aver is bottled to the nefesh, but it's not miyuchad with the nefesh. It's not one with the nefesh. In Torah, there's unity is achieved. We become one. Yeah. Yeah. It's not the mitzvah of limudat Torah. The mitzvah of Limud HaTorah is a mitzvah. It's the chemistry of Torah. It's inherent in the chemistry of the Torah literature, so to speak. Versus the chemistry of a mitzvah. Chemistry of a mitzvah is fulfillment of an act. Fulfillment of the act that Hashem wants is not the want. It's not the God experience. It's fulfilling Hashem's experience. You didn't experience God. Even mitzvah satlu is belief. Mitzvah is Hashem has an experience. As a result of that godly experience, you're going ahead and acting. But the act itself is not the divine experience. The divine experience is that you should put on tefillin. So you go ahead and you put on tefillin. In Torah you become connected to the you should. Not to the you do. Because in Torah, what are you learning? You're learning you should. That's what you learn. That's what you're becoming connected with. So when you're doing a mitzvah, the mitzvah itself, and the soul involved in the mitzvah become an aver to Hashem. Vos says they become an aver to Hashem, avar in the malka, even the mitzvah itself. They have no identity save the fact that they are a medium and instruments for the divine energy, but ultimately there is a he, there is you and I. There is he and there is I. True, no ego, no agenda, no distinct personality. In Torah, however, the Ratzon Elyon, he says, Hu advar halacha atzma. Since that is the dvar halacha, what am I having a relationship with? So we don't only become an aver to the melech. Become kul echad with the melech. This applies to whenever a Jew learns Torah. The question is now feeling it. That the Alter Rebbe is going to address. Experiencing it in an internal way, feeling it. We'll soon see that. V'layayid. Furthermore. Sheyichudam who b'yesu says v'yeserets miyichud erin save baruch hu b'elam asal yeinu. Their unity, the unity of man's thought and speech during learning Torah, is even more powerful, more exalted, and more powerful than the unity of Hashem's infinite light with the upper spiritual worlds. And you're dealing with worlds that are totally permeated with godliness. So the human identity, says, its unity with Hashem during learning Torah transcends their unity. Me'achar sheratzin alyan. Hu begilui mamish b'nefesh alavushal eiskin b'teira. For the divine will is actually manifest in the soul and its garments that are engaged in Torah study. Sharei hu hu ha-Torah atzma. Since it is the Torah itself. Mitzvahs, again, are the expression of the ratzin. The properties of the mitzvah, the properties that are involved in the act of the mitzvah, are expressions of the ratzin. The Torah is not an expression of the ratzin. The Torah is the ratzin itself. So when a Jew is learning Torah, the ratzin alien itself, not its expressions and not its manifestations and not its realizations and not its embodiments, the ratzin alien itself is revealed in man's identity, in man's soul and in man's garments. In man's powers of seichel, chachma, bina, das, and in man's machshav and dibur. V'chol oilem esol yeinem mekablam chayusom me'er v'chayis hanimshich mehateira. Now all the worlds, the supernal worlds, receive their vitality by way of the light and life derived from the Torah. Shehi ritzeinu v'chachmasiyiz baruch, which is Hashem's will and wisdom. Torah is Hashem's inner will and inner wisdom. So all the worlds receive their vitality from Torah. Kedeksiv, as the Pasuk puts it, and Tillim, Kulam b'chachma sisa, through wisdom you have made them all. And Torah is Hashem's chachma, so they receive their vitality from Torah. V'im kein ha-chachma shi'ya Torah l'mayla mikul. Thus it follows that Hashem's wisdom, the Torah, transcends them all. It must be above all the worlds, since it is their source. So the human being, the experience in the supernal world is an experience of energy which is derived from Torah. The human being which is learning Torah is in touch intimately with the very Ratzin which is the source of their energy. And in fact, the Torah is Hashem's will, which is described in Kabbalistic terminology as Seviv Kalam, as encompassing, transcending, and encompassing all the worlds. Meaning that it is at a level that cannot become clothed within the world, but rather animates and illuminates them as in a transcending and an encompassing manner. And it's this reality, it's this level, which transcends all the worlds, that is clothed in a truly revealed form in one soul and his soul garments when he studies Torah. It's this level which the worlds themselves cannot contain. That intimate Ratzon Elyon, which is the source of the worlds, is ultimately giving them life, but it transcends them. It does not become permeated. It doesn't penetrate and enclose itself within their parameters and in their vessels.